at the forefront of our minds all along has been the victim. And during this past year, we've tried to reach out to them in various ways, including and especially with the IRCP program. That is winding down now, and we thought, is there something more that we could do? And, you know, we over the past several weeks, we've thought about releasing the names. We thought a nice time to do it might be the beginning of Advent, a season of hope, expectation, healing. And it was brought about by a number of things. Some people in the diocese had suggested to me that they would rather hear it from me than hear it from the media or from a government agency. They thought it would be better if it came from me. Obviously, some victims were very interested in having the names out, and we heard them. There's a number of other victims who, even as recently as last week, encouraged me not to release the names. So you do have people on both sides of that. In the end, I thought if we're ever going to achieve some measure of healing, regain some measure of trust on the part of the people, that it would be a good thing to do.
Okay. How much did the fact that you are going to be leaving within the next year play into this?
Well, I think I felt that it wasn't, it would be better for me to make the announcement. I've been here for 10 years. I think the priests and people, by and large, trust me. They know that this was a difficult decision for me to make. And I did not think it was a fair decision to leave for my successor, who might have to, in a month or two, make an announcement like that. And then that would color his whole term here. So I thought it was better for me to do it. And I'm happy I did it.
How many of these victims have been urging you to not release it, who have been, I guess, basically kind of a roadblock? Are there a lot? Is it just one or two? I mean,
no, it'd be more than one or two. It'd probably be six or eight.
Mm-hmm.
That have at different times said that they really didn't want it to be released. And you know, there's also, in addition to victims, there is a number of people, faithful Catholics in the diocese, who also said to me, you know, we don't need to know this. You don't need to release that. And of course, the others, you know, these priests, it's an awkward situation in the sense that they haven't really been found, we've found them guilty. Civil society or the civil law hasn't found them guilty at times.
So then the, I think 19 or so who are still alive,
right,
are they still in this area? Do you keep track of them? I mean, how does...
Yeah, we keep track of them, and we have a person, a retired police officer, who basically visits them on a monthly basis. Not all of them are in the area. Some are far away, California or whatever. So they're not definitely in the area. You know, we have, once they're removed from the parochial state, we have, very honestly, little control over them, where they go or what they do, you know. So, but they're removed.
And we are one of the few dioceses to have a compliance officer. That's something we initiated early on.
That keeps and checks up with them.
Yes.
They
the
don't
DA
do that like in Buffalo or anything. Okay.
Where they are, where they live,
mm-hmm,
and who they are.
Mm-hmm. The impact of this. It doesn't seem to be getting any better. I mean, we first heard about this in 2002, and we're still grappling with it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's true. But things, in the sense of taking care of things, the cases that we're hearing about or still hearing about took place many decades ago, in the 80s and the 90s, early 90s, 70s. So anyhow, since that time, you know, the church has done many things to rein it in, but that doesn't mean that accusations still from 20 and 30 years ago still aren't coming. I think the mistake has been this year, in my opinion, like after the Pennsylvania grand jury report, the feeling was that all of these things had just recently taken place, when actually they had all taken place prior to 2000, with two or three exceptions. So I think, you know, and new people have come out to us since we announced the IRCP program, that people had never told us that things happened. So people are continuing to come out, but as far as I can tell, the events that have taken place, we say here in the diocese, with the exception of two, took place prior to 1991 and prior. And the two that took place after that, where the situation of Father Robert Hours, who child pornography, that was all in the paper, and he received a sentence for it. And another one involving John Broderick, who was a trial case which resulted in a mistrial.
With the release of these names, do you expect a flurry of calls or any new calls?
Well, it's hard to know. People, I mean, I think that we've always been responsive to calls that have come in, whether there are new victims out there. We've invited people who are victims to come forward and let us know. Whether we'll get a lot, I don't know.
Is there anything, when you look at this list, and do you know these folks individually and personally, that, I don't know, that strikes you as a common denominator or something along those lines?
Well, very honestly, many of these priests I did not know personally, because I've only been here 10 years. I mean, I've come to know some of them through the years. Nothing. I mean, they're formed. I think that they were part of, the free generation of the 1960s and 70s, and people misbehaved, not just priests.
When the decision to release this, it's followed other, dioceses. I mean, Buffalo already released. And why, I guess, did you feel a sense that you were kind of like you had to do it because you were the last standing?
Because actually when you look at the diocese in the United States, I guess maybe now about a third have released names, so two-thirds haven't. So I didn't really feel that way. I thought it just came to me, really, after a lot of consultation and prayer, that this was the way to go at this time, and it seemed to be the right time. And I'm hoping it'll help bring healing and wholeness to victims, and bring a renewed sense of trust to the church, which is their first goal, our first love. I mean, the victims, we want healing and wholeness. We also want people to still have faith in the church. I look upon the church as a mother, and the church nurtures us and educates us and forms us. But as we become adults, sometimes we don't always agree with all the things our mother did or does. And I think it's the same with the church. A couple of victims, even in the past week, have told me how that while it was very hard for them to endure what they endured, the church was their home. And they wanted to always be part of it and feel a part of it and maybe help it in some way get over this. So that was very encouraging to me.
You almost supposed to be encouraged by the fact that some of the things that have been put in place since 2002, there haven't been any sort of any further accusations or anything along those lines.
Right. In the Diocese of Syracuse, we've educated about 42,000 people and had criminal background checks on 42,000 people who work with young people, who are volunteers in our parishes, in our schools, our healthcare institutions. And we've, set up protocols. We've got policies in place. We're always trying to keep the victim in mind and trying to move the church forward, I guess.
Do you think you can get back the people who are just so angry? I mean, I've been at listening sessions. People are just angry and don't understand how a church based in love could have acknowledged and accepted this and hidden it.
Right. Well, I think, I hope we can get them back. In answer to the first part of your question, I think the church, like all of civil society, treated things in pretty much the same way. And I think we've come to a much greater understanding of child sexual abuse and a much greater appreciation of what it's done to people. The church really, after 2002, I think, has really stepped forward and tried to make sure things wouldn't happen again, but also tried to help the victims. So, I don't think we can forget the, in spite of all this, the wonderful work that the church continues to do in reaching out in food pantries and social service agencies and our schools and faith formation programs in our parishes, despite the sinfulness of the members of the church itself still continues to do a lot of good work.
Mm-hmm. And for you personally, I mean, your 10 years, a lot of your tenure as bishop has been taken up by this, hasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't exactly what I thought about when I became a bishop, but yes, it has been. And I feel that it's a grace that God has shared with me to be able, to the best of my ability, to work with people who have a legitimate concern about the church, a legitimate complaint. And I hope that when it's, I don't know whether we can ever say it'll be over, but we have to continue to keep working at it and keeping our minds clear and continue to protect young people and to reach out to victims.
And you feel at peace with this?
I am.
Mm-hmm. Just one other thing. You mentioned earlier something about people. They wanted to hear it from you because ultimately these names are going to come out when the Attorney General's report is made public, I would assume, just like the Pennsylvania one.
Yeah, I really don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what we're complying, cooperating with the subpoena, giving him the information he's asked, or she's asked now, and what they do with it, I don't know.